Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, podcast starts now. Wow, it is a beautiful day in the world, and we are spending it podcasting.
George, TGIF, as always, you guys.
As always. And TGIT, if you're listening to this on Tuesday.
And TGIT. Thank God it's tits.
You know, I brought up some things before we started recording that I want to address up top.
Ooh, what?
First of all, I'm wearing a hat today.
Right. Is it a Maine hat?
Yeah.
Maine the state.
Maine the
state.
And
it has a sort of puffin on it?
Correct.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a Maine hat with a puffin on it. You know, I think I have a new theory about, you know, of course, this is a podcast about podcasting, and I actually want to run this by you.
Okay.
And I think I've talked about this a little bit. I think podcasting as a medium mm-hmm. is in a race to
the bottom,
like the bottom, but the bottom being like, how can you be more and more casual?
Totally.
I actually feel I'm seeing so many podcast clips where people yeah. are splayed out on a chair, wearing sweatpants, like sort of pretending to be so chill. And I'm sort of like, you know, then you look at our clips where we're, you know, sitting upright, our posture's never been better. We're speaking
black tie
affair. And I think people see that and almost are like, oh, well, they're not the podcasting I like, because podcasting I like is laid back and chill. So I think with this hat, I'm trying to say I'm laid back and chill.
Oh, interesting. But so you're trying to be like everyone else?
I'm trying to respond to market demands.
Well, but you sort of have to stand out.
Well, I guess I want to know what you think about the original theory. Do you think podcasts are trying to be casual?
Well, yeah, but I mean, yes, they are, but in a way that to me always reads phony. And I actually have realized this even when watching us, where I'm like, wait, but we are authentic. I know, because I'm in my own body and I'm being the most real a person can be. But then when I see a clip of myself, I'm like, why is he pretending to be George?
Interesting.
There's a certain artifice that's inherent to the form. And like, and I actually think there's almost an uncanny valley quality where you are not having an actual real life conversation, but also not in a feature film directed by, let's say, Judd Apatow. So you are sort of like in this in-between spot where you are like, I mean, it almost feels like reality TV or something, you know, or not even reality TV, but almost like a Real Housewives reunion.
Yeah. No, I think this is actually kind of genius. In the media landscape, podcasting is purgatory.
Yes, 100%. And you know what else? Actually, I'm going to take it a step further and say social media performance also is purgatory. Mm-hmm. Like, we are all every day waking up and being You know, as Naomi Klein would say in her book Doppelganger, we are being doppelgangers of ourselves, that we ourselves created to respond to and cater to market forces. And so basically, you know, where is, you know, when Jennifer Lopez said, I'm real, that was the last time anyone ever said that with meaning and meant it. Wow. Is all I'm saying.
Huh. You know, I actually think you're right. And you're speaking to how deeply, deeply authentic and ourselves that we cannot help but be.
Absolutely.
And that is why I think potentially social media is not, we're not good at it. Mm-hmm. I think of the people that we, you know, interact with, we are some of the worst social media users we know.
I would say to the point where I think, I think how bad I am at Instagram is like, it's like against all odds, I can do a live show and people will buy tickets. Like, behold, the least charismatic online presence anyone can ever have. And yet he's going to Los Angeles and people are purchasing tickets to his show at the Elysian Theater.
Yeah, it really does feel like a protest, to be honest.
Right. And sometimes I'm like, wow, like it's, I mean, talk about being real. I'm like, if you were to look me up, you'd be like, get that fag off the TV. I'm not watching that, in the words of Tyra Banks. But then nevertheless, people have to come and see. And when they see me on that stage and I'm doing one of three moves that I do with my hands and I'm occasionally smiling in a sort of, not extremely charming way, but it's, I'm sort of going through the motions of.
I'd say smarmy.
it's a testament to my raw talent as a performer is all I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I think that's really amazing. Sometimes when I open up Instagram, I'm like I have this feeling of like, okay, it's time to break my silence. Like, and it's like,
totally.
And not about anything in particular.
Neither of us has ever gotten into a flow, because that's the thing. Someone told me this once. It's like, it's not about, I mean, this is the most obvious point ever, but it's basically not about quality. It is quite literally just like, keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. And that's how you develop a following. And I have never gotten over that first hump.
No, I can't keep doing it. Because it's like, at some point, you know, you're literally seeing yourself and you're like, why am I doing this? And you're like, I hate when other people do this. So why am I doing this? But
how do you bang your head against the wall enough time so that that part of your brain sort of, temporarily at least, atrophies? And then you can really lean into making content.
Yeah.
You know, also, it's sort of like, I actually think you seem more fake if you have that level of insecurity about it. And when you get over the hump, it's like, there's a line in Breakfast at Tiffany's where he's like, she's a phony, but she's a real phony. Like, you have to get to the point where we're just phony when we are post. I posted a photo of myself being like, oh, come to my show. Okay, who do I think I am? But if I, but let's say I post a photo of me, I'm wearing a bikini on a beach or something, and I'm like, if you like my fat ass, then come to my show. Then, you know, then I'm a real phony.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. I think there's something to that. A real phony versus a fake phony.
Yeah. And there's there's a famous quote in Daria to her. She's like, you're so shallow that it's, that you approach depth.
Yeah.
Or something. I'm sort of butchering the line, but I'm like, how do I get there? Because let me tell you something. We're far from the shallow now, in the words of Lady Gaga.
Yeah. I genuinely don't know how to get there. I don't necessarily want to find out. Again, have you heard my new theory?
Oh, no.
Okay, where I'm sort of just like waiting it out. Like, I'm sort of like...
Like, totally. You waiting out Instagram not being relevant anymore?
Yeah.
I'm yeah. Like, you no, know that is totally fair. And by the way, that was my approach for fully 7 years. And now I'm at the point where I'm like, okay, well, I guess it's here to stay. And like, I guess do something about it.
Yeah. I do find myself wanting an outlet. I do find myself wanting to express myself. Yeah. I just don't feel like Instagram is the place to do it. Mm-hmm.
And of course, talking into a microphone for an hour and a half a week is not enough.
That's true, actually. I do want to say this is the place to do it. And in fact, I do enjoy this medium as far as a way to express myself without overthinking it.
I 100% enjoy it. I think it is an art form. And, you know, I'm so grateful to be in the same industry as Dax Shepard.
Yeah, yeah. No, nothing but respect to the whole Dax and Kristen Bell family.
Yeah.
I guess, do we want to bring in our guest?
Oh, totally. Yeah. We absolutely should. You know, what I love about our podcast is, I would say, this is actually like, this is a special episode because I feel like once every 6 months, we have someone on, like a professionally smart person on. Don't you think it, that we have this cadence where it's like comedian, comedian, comedian. Occasionally it'll be like someone that's even worse than a comedian even. And then once every 6 months, it'll be like, okay, let's reset by having someone on that can sort of like be intellectual and then we can go back to being dumb.
Yeah. No, I think it's a beautiful cadence.
And I do feel like it's been a while. I think it's been a while. I mean, so without further ado, I mean, you know, this guest, I mean, we're talking, she is a literal professor. She writes for The New Yorker. She's a culture critic. She's written books. I mean, I don't even, I'm gonna turn off my mic as soon as I introduce her and not speak again because we are not worthy for our guest today, Lauren Michelle Jackson. Hello, Lauren.
Hello. Thank you for that introduction. What's so funny is that as a podcast recipient, as a listener, if you will, I love the dumb. I like am the person that like will scroll through like the episodes, and when I see like of you know any podcast, and I see like smart person, smart person, smart person, comedian. I'm like, then we might be onto something.
Yeah.
Grass is always greener, you know?
The grass is always greener. I mean, to me, I'm like, my favorite is a smart person being dumb. Like, it's like having, when we had like Andrew Long Chu on and her topic was the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's my sweet spot right there.
Yes.
And you know what the worst thing is? Dumb person trying to be smart.
Well, and that's most of podcasting.
Exactly. I would say that is where we came in and really messed, really sort of experimented with the form. Is we said most podcasting is dumb people trying to be smart. We're going to have smart people on and ask them about why freeways are straighter than highways.
Lauren, I did, you know, when I saw that you were a professor, I got scared. When I saw that you were a literal professor, I said, uh-oh, office hours. I was traumatized a bit. I said, uh-oh, you know, I haven't, you know, a professor to me is such a heightened position in the world. Mm-hmm. And it scared me, to be honest. How does that make you feel?
I mean, I think it's hard because, like, I think I maybe have what is possibly the most humorless job there could ever possibly be.
Sure.
Not only, you know, not only being a professor, but to be a professor of English literature. Like, I think, I don't know, I feel like the sciences get to be a little wacky and do the kind of like fun thing at the front of the classroom where they're, you know, both like out of touch, but also just sort of have a lovable, I don't know. I had a calculus professor back in the day who reminded me of, he looks exactly like Santa Claus, basically. I mean, this guy probably has like, I don't know, a Nobel or something like that. But like, I was like, oh, he's so fun. I don't know what he's saying, but you know, he looks like Santa. Whereas like, I don't know, literature is just so, you know, literally like, let's turn to page 50.
But to me, literature is so like you standing backwards on a chair and being like, Shakespeare is actually like, you know, rock and roll.
Now that is what I've always wanted to be.
Yeah.
I think you're saying something really smart. I think the fact that like science, the sciences and the maths, they get to sort of like rest on their laurels because people inherently respect science and math.
Yeah.
They don't have to prove that they are serious people. And in fact, gets to like, it's, there's almost like, okay, I'm trying to make it this podcast. There's a misogyny towards the arts.
Well, obviously.
And like the sciences are like men and they can like fuck around because it's like, well, we trust them, but women have to be like proving that they're smart all the time. And that's the English professor. The English professor has to show they have value.
But you also can't win because, okay, the humanities are undervalued. So what is the solution to that is to make them seem even more serious than they are. But then that makes them seem even more boring and even less sort of interesting than they are. So then you're like, okay, fine, then I'll try to make them fun. And then people publish like academic papers on Taylor Swift. But then people that already are primed to not care about the humanities are like, oh, look what those idiots are doing. They're publishing papers about Taylor Swift. And you're like, well, yeah, that's because actually zero people are declaring English this year because we keep writing about, you know, John Updike or whatever. And so that's why we had to do Taylor Swift. So you, it's a, it, you can't win.
Literally, you literally can't win. And I think like I am in the insisting upon seriousness, like stage of things. I think in part because I'm younger comparatively, I would say. So, you know, everyone's already coming to my class with whimsy, which is like great. And, you know, of course I want to foster that. But my job is, it feels like, is to be like, you know, everyone's opinion matters, but there are also, I like to say that there are actually right answers in the English classroom, but where like, I think we've gotten a little too like, oh, it's up to your interpretation and however you feel. And so I have to like bring down the hammer of like, no, there actually are kind of like established, you know, empirical things that are going on that we maybe should talk about.
I actually love that. I was an English major in college and I was like, really making some big swings because I was sort of just like, whatever, like, just like read it and vibe and like, what does it make you feel? And truly, like, I would hand in essays that made no sense. And my professors would start to be like, this is incorrect. And I was like, you know what? I did need to hear that. Like, and it just really felt like I was being like, I was almost like performing the idea of reading something intellectually, and I needed to be told that, like, no, it's not fake. Like, you can't just read into it whatever you feel. You have to find something true.
But then to like,
so I love
to
that.
Like George's point, you know, if you actually do read a lot of English literature scholarship, I mean, there's like a whole body of thought called like affect theory, and like, no disrespect, because I also identify with that like intellectual tradition. A lot of it is very like touchy-feely. I mean, Cedric literally has like touching feeling is like a book. So like, you know, it's kind of funny when you do get to the like the scholarly point of it. It's like, yeah, actually sometimes it is. I mean, people do research on vibes. It's like...
Yeah. Well, okay. So affect theory was really popular when I was in grad school. And I remember being like, oh, so like anything goes. And so then I would try to be like, to just say something completely out of my ass. But then when I did it, it was wrong because you actually have to build on the existing the existing theories that people literally did make up. And if they didn't make them up, then sorry, they're just based on Freud. So it's like the two options are make something up or base it on Freud.
Yeah. It's like you do actually have to... Well, it's like you do actually have to read, right?
Yeah. Right.
And that's that actually tough. That's where it gets sort tough.
That is where it gets tough. Anyway, and then I can't even get into it.
No, but yeah, I think the last thing I'll say is just like, I do want to be like the fun. I would like to be the fun professor, but like the turn the chair around and just like... Yeah, I like try to bring that like, we're just talking about books, you know, take a chance, anything can happen. Mm-hmm. And then I also have to, you know, do the, well, that's interesting. What makes you think that, or is there a place in the book you can go that can maybe help us understand this idea of yours a little bit better?
Yeah.
You know what I miss most about college is being in a discussion group and like having the TA be like, okay, so what did we think about this part? And everyone just sitting there silently and then being like, okay, so did anyone think anything? And everyone's completely silent. And just knowing like that tenseness where you're like, no one has read this. Clearly, like, we ought to sit here for the next 45 minutes. What is going to happen? That danger, that daringness is... I don't have that in my life anymore.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you want to be like, okay, I'll step up, I'll say something. And then you say like one sentence and then people start to question you and you're like, I'm sorry, I took one for the team. Like, I'm not going to be interrogated when I am literally doing charity by speaking up right now so that we're not all just like staring at our, twiddling our thumbs.
It's like, yeah, I'd like to push back on that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, shut up. You should have spoken up first if you wanted to push back on it, because I was the one brave enough to speak up.
Oh my God. I mean, the way that pushing back is the easiest thing you can do in class, because you don't even have to have an opinion. You just have to push back on an opinion.
Totally. And this is actually, I would say, this is something I have personally tried to escape I've tried to escape that impulse where it's so much easier to be the critic than to be the one who actually puts forth an original idea. And I'm almost even nervous saying that, because that's almost like undermining the role of the critic, which is not what I'm trying to do. But you do sort of get to a point where you're like, okay, what is my end goal by actually criticizing everything?
Yeah. I remember being a real crank. When I first moved to New York, especially, like, I was in, like, music circles, and we were really, like, judgmental of every other band, and it was, like, so mean. And then I was like, wait, why? Like, at some point, you can't do this. Like, you have to make friends with them and stop being critical. Mm-hmm. Because we're not
critics. then it makes it even more enjoyable, where you really find something you hate and you're like, oh, now I can really let loose after a full month of being mostly positive.
Right. You can't like be a person that in the media space, you cannot write pans all the time, because then they don't like mean anything, right?
Totally.
Though I do think the funniest thing is that like people who become either professors or like professional critics, like, do tend to be the people that were like that guy or that gal, like in the classroom. Like, I was very much like, I tell my students this, I was like, I was not a great student. I wouldn't do the reading all the time, but you can bet that I would have something to say about the reading that I didn't do. I was the pushing back. I was always pushing back.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, you want to make a splash. No one's going to award you for doing the reading. Like, you have to come in with a really cool opinion.
Speaking of cool opinions, there's something we wanted to address. Lauren, which is that you are wearing a Nickelback t-shirt.
I am wearing a Nickelback t-shirt.
And George did an interesting thing where he sort of took almost credit for it, saying, you're doing this for us.
Well, I said, it's obviously to celebrate straight culture. I mean, if anything, I would say it's almost too on the nose in a celebration of straight culture. I mean, the criticism of Nickelback, talk about people being critics, the criticism of Nickelback to me is very like 2015. And so I was like, oh, interesting. But then you said that, in fact, you're not wearing it as a tribute to the topic of our podcast. You just happened to see them live this summer.
I mean, I would be happy for it to retroactively have been a thing that I put on specifically for the pod, and not because it is, in fact, an incredibly comfortable t-shirt, surprisingly, for merch. But yes, I saw them this summer. They were very Nickelback, which, if you like Nickelback, is a good thing. and it was, oh man, what a time. Yeah, I think we've like fully crossed over from the like hating Nickelback moment. I mean, speaking of like reflexive criticality.
Yeah. Totally. Completely.
So shallow,
reflexive.
It's deep. We're like back to something with it.
Yeah. And also like, of course I understand. I'm not going to be like, Nickelback is actually like a radically amazing band. I'm not, you know, they're fine. But the idea that they were the worst thing ever always seemed so random to me. Like, they are just simply much worse bands.
It also just didn't make sense to me because their songs were so popular. I was like,
yeah.
I was like, well, someone's listening to the music.
This is something I think about a lot, where I'm like, somebody's lying. Like, these things can't be so popular and then we all hate them also. I felt that way about Dane Cook. I felt that way. Sometimes I feel that way about like foot fetishes. Like, everyone's like making fun of people with foot fetishes. And I'm like, but there's so many websites dedicated to feet. Somebody's lying. It's.
I mean, and just like that is like the latest of that. I was like, how can this be the worst show that everyone agrees is the worst show that everyone... I mean, I guess it's like a hate watch, but even that is like...
I do think, as someone who does watch And Just Like That, I mean, it is sort of like... It is not good.
Yeah. I mean, that is more of a hate watch for me. But it's also just like... I still can't break the nostalgia of Sex and the City. Like, I just love it so much that it's like, to know that they are still alive in the TV and I'm not up to date on what they're up to, it hurts me.
It's so actually it would be disrespectful for me to not watch And Just Like That. It would be disrespectful to like where I came from.
Yeah.
And it would be disrespectful, frankly, to the United States of America.
Yeah. It's like, okay, so what, am I also not going to go home for Christmas? Like, you have to see your parents. Like,
yeah. Okay. I do. Okay. I feel that. But yeah, I mean, I love Sex and the City so much.
But you don't watch And Just Like That.
I fell off. Like I actually got bored, and I was like, that's like the real, that's like the actual like disinterest is just like, I could not keep up. But yeah, I mean, love Sex and the City. Speaking of trying to be fun, I taught an episode of Sex and the City this quarter, and wow. Anyway,
which episode?
The Carrie dates a bi guy.
Oh, classic!
Just like amazing, amazing brunch table conversation. Of course, Samantha. You know, well, I'm a trisexual. You know, it's just like I'll try anything. It's just like it's picture perfect.
Yeah. Wow.
Do you feel like the sort of like 2000s, 2010s move towards studying pop culture was ultimately detrimental for society because then everyone felt like they were a professor?
I mean, in my like grumpiest times, I'm like, yes, if only because, no, I'm not going to go off, but like, legal things will happen in the news, and like the first thing, like legal, like lawyers will like come on to Twitter and be like very grumpy and like, actually everyone's talking about copyright law and nobody knows anything about, you know, well actually like blah 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 blah. And I kind of feel a little bit like, you know, I'm not telling medical people how to do their medicine. I'm not telling insert other profession that I can't think about, but you know, every profession has some sort of expertise, right? In my like grumpiest moments, I'm like, well, you know, being able to look at a film and talk about it competently is actually a skill.
Yeah.
That like some people possess. But then even that is just like also kind of like a really boring complaint because it's like, you know, I don't know, that seems unequal in some way or like, I don't know, prejudiced.
Yeah, it's almost the definition of elitism.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Perhaps they have a word for that.
No, but okay, but you're also pointing to, again, the double bind of the humanities where you just can't, you literally can't win either way. Like, you can't win by being, you know, sort of taking on the elitist position because then you're elitist, and you also can't win by being like, well, everybody can do this, because then it's like, right, then why do they pay you to do it?
Right.
Yeah. To be fair, I am as critical of, you know, English professors as I am of doctors.
And that's true egalitarianism.
You know, there's doctors, they really think they can just tell you anything.
Oh yeah, Sam hates doctors.
This is my new thing.
I love this as a new thing.
Yeah, yeah, well, because Sam was in the hospital recently, and he really got to know doctors up close and personal. It's sort of like, you know, when I was in grad school for 2 years and then came out being like, academics need help.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen doctors up close in action, and I'm sort of like, uh-huh, so you guys are also sort of riffing.
Yeah.
So we agree that they, like, don't do anything, right?
No, they're horrible.
There's maybe like one expert. It's like with doctors, it's like there's one expert in Switzerland who like you want to see because he's the one, or she is the one good doctor. But then everyone else is sort of like, it's giving adjunct.
They also just like actively, I think they have like a disdain for their patients in a way where they're like, if you're like, I'm feeling this, they're instantly like, honey, you don't know what you're feeling. And yeah, it's like, no, I actually do. Like, unfortunately, this is a listening exercise and you have to, you know, take an improv class, sweetie, because it's time to yes and my feelings.
I think they're just a little bit too laid back for me. to be so hair.
Doctors as a whole.
Doctors,
totally.
Doctors as a whole, I'll say. I mean,
yeah.
I think everyone has their like confrontation with the medical industrial complex, as it were. For me, it happened in college when I had mono, and I came in and I was so sure, speaking of like doubting personal testimony, I was so sure I had mono. Of course, I had done the WebMD thing. My lymph nodes were just like, my neck was like twice the size of it. And I was like, I feel weak. I'm pretty sure I have mono. I'm also, you know, I'm in a PhD program. Like I, you know, I'm not like going to be hysterical about this. And the doctor was like, yeah, I mean, maybe, but you know, and I was like, I'm running a marathon in 2 weeks. Like I, you know, I need to know because I heard it's dangerous to try to exercise. He's like, I don't know. Maybe you have it. Maybe you don't. Worst case, maybe you do. You know, I was just like, yeah.
Worst case you do, best case you don't.
I was like, okay, cool. I feel like I could have also made that sort of deduction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like then test me. Like,
you know, the hardest thing to come by in our culture, answers. No one has them.
No one has them.
No matter how many degrees you have.
I think that actually could be an incredible segue into our first segment, which is all about providing answers.
It's all about providing answers and being rated for it. Okay.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We are both dealing with such different issues in our day-to-day lives. You have a full-time job in Los Angeles. You've had to uproot your home. You have to figure out work-life balance. Meanwhile, I am a freelancer in New York City. How do I fit it all in one day? How do I create my own schedule? What am I, some boss lady in a film?
You know, it's so hard. You have to be boss and employee. But you know what? We can't keep these things bottled up. You know, we need to let them out.
That's right. People all carry around different stressors, both big and small. And when you bottle them up, it can start to affect you negatively.
Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
I'll tell you something. Therapy in the past for me has been just a place where once a week I can tell someone what I'm thinking of in a safe and enclosed space where no one can enter and ask me to send an email, because it is my time and it is my time for therapy. And everyone deserves that in all across this great nation.
Yeah, so if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and hey, suited for your schedule.
So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/stradio today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stradio. Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lauren, our first segment is called Straight Shooters, and in this segment, we will ask you a series of rapid-fire questions to gauge your familiarity with and complicity in straight culture. It's basically this thing or this other thing, and the only rule is you can't ask any follow-up questions, or we will get so pissed at you that you're going to be like,
we're going to leave you bad reviews on ratemyprofessors.com.
Yeah, no student will ever take your class again. You'll be forced to do a Taylor Swift class.
Well, I've happened to know from following you on social media, you are kind of a Swiftie.
I am a bit of a Swiftie, though I do have to say, I feel like I had like a tweet the other day that I thought was pretty good. Sorry, that's like obnoxious to say, but I think the like, the Swiftie Overton window has shifted so much that like even my degree of fandom no longer qualifies as as a Swiftie.
Totally.
Because I have a, you know, semi-unhealthy sort of attachment to her music and her stardom versus whatever it's become now.
Yeah, versus being institutionalized in American Horror Story Asylum. Okay, Sam, take it away.
Oh, okay. Lauren, Killers of the Flower Moon or winners of Name That Tune?
Name That Tune.
Okay, Lauren, failing a Turing test or signing an email best?
Oh, best.
Okay, Lauren, saying I have intergenerational trauma or saying I get it from my mama?
Ooh, I get it from my mama.
Okay, updating your iOS or queer baiting with your massive breasts?
Oh my God. I'll pick queer baiting.
Okay, a cultural shift or a vulture.com list?
Nice.
Oh, I do love vulture. I do love a vulture.com list.
Yeah. Okay, The Fast and the Furious, or congrats, he's bi-curious.
Damn, that one spoke to me.
Congrats, he's bi-curious.
Yeah.
Okay, may the force be with you, may the odds be ever in your favor, or maybe she's born with it, maybe it's Maybelline.
Nice.
May the odds ever be in your favor, or whatever the Hunger Games thing is.
Okay. If you know, you know. If you build it, they will come. Or... the mic's too
high. It can't be that bad. That one.
Wow. I love a multimedia presentation. That is amazing.
Wow. Well, I got so nervous that I had it, that I like rehearsed having it paused at the right moment. And I'm literally shaking because I was like, what if it didn't work?
No, that was
And then when
incredible.
I pressed play, you guys looked a little confused because I think the sound was not immediately apparent. And I was like, I fucked it up.
No, I think you completely nailed that. And I think you're pushing the straight shooters game to higher and higher heights.
Thank you.
So, Lauren, we rate our guests on a scale of 0 to 1,000 doves. And, George, how do you think she did?
Okay. I mean, the thing is, I do think we have to be even stricter than normal because we are dealing with, like, an actual sort of professional thinker, which most of our guests are not. So, I think if this was, like, I think if Lauren was an open mic comedian, I'd say 1,000 doves.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in this day and age, I think it's going to have to be like 920.
Okay.
Wow.
So a curve that actually, that hurts me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Wow. I mean, I 100% agree. George is always right. And I would never question him.
Yeah. But that's still really good.
I'll
that's
take amazing. It. I'll take it.
Okay, I do want to get to our topic because I want to, before we get into it, I really want to get into the list of topics you sent because I would say it is, in fact, I'm going to say this confidently, the number one best list of topics we have gotten.
I mean,
the most comprehensive, broad.
There's range within it.
I mean, the PhD jumped out.
Yeah.
It's a bit much.
But the thing is, I think it could be a bit much if you had like over-intellectualized it, but actually you met us exactly where we are and all of these topics would like make sense on the pod. It's not like you came in and you were like, my topic is affect theory.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That'd be, well, I just had a little bit of anxiety and like the second after I sent them, because it reminded me of this time when my friends were having a Halloween party and they were looking for like playlist suggestions for songs. And I literally sent them basically like a fully executed party playlist. And they're like, okay, well, maybe pick a couple selections from this, but appreciate the enthusiasm.
Wow. I mean, George, should we read the whole thing or should we pick like, okay.
I can read the whole thing from beginning to end, and then maybe we can pick a couple to do like one sentence about. How about that?
Okay.
Okay, so I'm just going to read the whole thing from beginning to end. Okay. Cruise control / driving, identity, nuance, the expression you guys, blackout Wednesday, backpacks, touch tunes / digital jukeboxes, happy hour, creative nonfiction, voting, getting fired up, book covers, parentheses, the blob especially, philanthropy / donating money, audiobooks, remember when, Seinfeld, housewives, it's the thought that counts, water parks and amusement parks in general, going through the motions, that's a favorite of mine, Taylor Swift, parentheses, gay lures aside, running, mimosas, chain hotels, a nude lip, team sports, and the expression go big or go home.
Wow.
Wow. I mean,
so comprehensive.
So at first we were like, my first instinct was to do identity because I was like, we need to have the final word on identity on this podcast.
And then I was like, well, that actually feels like it might be too nuanced of a conversation to have.
And then Lauren, in fact, said the opposite. Because Lauren, you were like, no, it's so obvious.
No, it's like it's of so, course. It's so self-evident that, like, you know, straight people have identity.
Have identities and queer people don't.
But like the idea of like, oh, imagine like a straight person like holding really steadfast to like how they choose totally. To think of themselves or how the world sees them, you know? Imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. My theory for this was going to be like identity is straight, but action is queer. It's like clinging on to an identity is a very straight thing. Whereas to me, the queer thing is in fact enacting that identity in specific ways.
Yes.
So you're saying like, oh, you're bi, well then go hook up with someone of the same sex.
Literally. That is exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah. And like, I like almost have what I is maybe like a smart, I was supposed to say a smart version of that, but I think
wow, I would be interested to hear.
No, George needed to hear that.
I did need to hear that.
No, but like, I think this like actually like does have to do with, you know how like people use the word performative, like incorrectly.
It's a performative utterance.
Yes. And yes. That like performativity mm-hmm. is actually about like words that do things versus like the way we use performative now, which is like means like fake or like posturing or like saying you're an ally and like not actually doing totally. Allyship. So that's like the, I guess like citational.
Yeah. So it's like
to what you were saying.
Exactly. And it's sort of like performative. The real performative is queer and the fake performative is straight.
Yeah. Just like Judith Butler said.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like Judith Butler said. She's always said that.
I mean, what's one of them that spoke to me that we're not going to do is water parks. I think that really spoke to me because there is, you know, to me, a water park could easily be LGBTQ+. Like there's something so whimsical and, you know, clothing optional about a water park that I'm like, right, this is a queer space to sort of let your freak flag fly. But that actually is never what they are. And in fact, they're deeply, deeply conservative. And the promise of the queerness of a water park is what makes it even straighter.
I would almost say the promise is not even there.
it's bathing culture. It's beautiful. It's community.
It's so
sure.
Modest.
I mean, you're thinking of like a yes. Yeah. I mean, it's also so children. Like, if you're gonna let your freak flag fly at the water park, you're gonna get arrested for public indecency.
And also, like,
sure.
I mean, water parks to me invoke Wisconsin for some reason, and so.
Well, the Dells.
The Dells, of course. It also, like, a lot of, like, water parks in the Midwest, such as they even still exist. I feel like they should probably not exist anymore, are very, like, interior. So that also, like, adds another level of, like, sort of, like, indoor hotel pool kind of vibes, which is also, I think, to me, very family, very kids, very, like, chlorine, which is a smell that I don't dislike, to be honest, but...
Yeah, it actually really speaks to me.
They're also dirty in a non-sexual way. Like, they're just dirty. You can't be turned on by the kind of dirty a water park is. Whereas you actually can be turned on by the kind of dirty, like, a locker room shower is.
Right, or a bathroom.
Yeah, yeah.
Or yeah. Yeah. Yeah, or like a toilet filled with shit. Okay, so then...
should we get to the topic that we
we should get to it. The Blob book covers Blob is also fun, but we can't get into it.
Yeah.
Okay, so the topic we decided on is happy hour, which I actually think is it is broad enough to really encapsulate a lot of stuff we want to talk about. So I guess, Lauren, like, in a few sentences, like, what inspired you about happy hour and what do you think makes it straight?
There's a lot of points of entry here. So First of all, happy hour completely exists within the constellation of like work wife, work husband, which to me yes. is just like the straightest configuration of a work relationship. Like literally we cannot think of a colleague relationship outside of the kind of marriage form. And like that is very, you know, all of that is like very present in happy hour. It's like this idea of a kind of faux community. It's not real. It's having drinks with literally people you work with. It's very, I was gonna say very alcoholic. I mean, but it also is. It's permission to kind of like fuck off the end of the workday and just like hang out with these people who you maybe like, but like don't like, and you're in your work clothes, and at like, I don't know, like a sports bar pub, and no one's dancing, but people are getting like progressively drunker and more like rowdy, I will say.
Totally.
Yeah. I think this really does speak to me. This one really jumped out to me. I think like, because I think when I was like, when I first moved to New York City, there was something I really romanticized about the happy hour, where I was like, damn, when you are going to the happy hour, your life must be so together. You go to work, you go to happy hour, you go home, you go to sleep, you do it all over again. And I was like, that really sounds like nice. But then I was like, that's like, it is almost fantasizing about the traditional family. Like you're like, like media has told me I want this and I actually don't want this. Like what I actually want is like, to go out to dinner with a friend and like have like a meaningful moment there's an assumption with the happy hour that like you're not doing anything that night. Mm-hmm. And like this is the final stop. This is your hour of, you know, socializing before you go back to your rules.
Yeah.
And I don't think we tie ourselves down in such a way.
The way that it is so regimented and built into a day that is assumed to be a certain way, like the way it assumes conformity is very straight. It is also sort of like recess or nap time for adults. Like there's something very infantilizing about it. Even the name happy hour actually sounds like something out of Orwell. Like it's like there's a fascistic government and they are allowed one hour of happiness every day. And if you go even 1 minute past that, you will get shot on the street. And so there's like that, there's a sort of like, it's very, the lady doth protest too much. Like happy hour, are you sure? Is that happy? Because it actually sounds kind of sad, the concept of a happy hour. And also, okay, the deals are never that good.
No.
Actually, sometimes they are, but often they are not.
They are, but they're not.
Like they'll be like, yeah, it's like $2 off of well drinks.
Right. Or like the good happy hour deals are not actually at the places where happy hour takes place.
Yeah.
So like the, like in Chicago, like the sort of like downtown in the loop, around the loop, like those kinds of places are where people go for happy hour, at least used to pre-pandemic. And, but like those places are already overpriced. So it's like your happy hour is paying maybe what is like close to a humane price for like a draft beer or whatever. And I also am saying all this as someone who like adores happy hour.
Oh, of course.
It needs to be said.
It needs to be said. Yeah. Well, also like this, how finite it is. Like there's a sort of scarcity mindset where the entire time you're like, the clock is ticking. When are we going to get that final drink? Because it's about to be $2 more expensive.
Yeah. The scarcity mindset does stress me out. I also like, when you get to a bar and you look at the menu and you see the happy hour prices and you see what you're about to pay, it does hurt my feelings. Like, there is an element of me where it's like, you know what? I'm going to come back here one day on happy hour and they're not going to get away with what they're about to do to me. Like, I'm getting their deal and I never ever do, but I do fantasize about it. And it's cruel that they show you what you could be having.
Right. And yeah. Have you ever had the situation where, you know, you're meeting someone up for happy hour and it's like, the clock, I mean, speaking of the clock, like the clock is ticking and they get there with maybe 10 minutes to spare. And you're just like, you got to order now, as though like the drinks become just like astronomically more expensive or you are going to get tossed out. And you're like, should we double fist? Should you be triple fist? Like what, you know, that kind of urgency around happy hour also makes it somewhat of a manic atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
When you're like 2 minutes after happy hour and the bartender's like actually flexible and he's like, you know what, you're like, I'll give you the happy hour deal still. The way that I'm just like, you have saved my life. and like, I like, what's your address? I'm sending you a Christmas present. Like what? It's weird how that like small gesture seems like the biggest gesture on earth.
Yeah. I'm like, there's something about the specific hour. It's meant to be obviously the hour between work and dinner, presumably. Mm-hmm. And there is something about that hour that actually like almost, it is a scary time because you're in this liminal space where you are not sure what to do. And there's something about the concept of a happy hour that it's like, it's almost like the government being like, here's your bottle. Don't question it. Like in that hour, if we actually liberated ourselves in that hour, we could actually like come up, we could actually collectively organize.
Well, that actually like brings to mind a question. Is that like the idea behind happy hour? Like the presumption is that you have dinner plans and you have dinner plans in a part of the city that would make it not make sense for you to go all the way home, change or whatever, and like come back. Because I actually don't know if I've ever been in a happy hour situation where I had like an evening to get to, like that this was like a way station. It's like happy hour swallows the evening. Like it becomes the evening.
Yeah. I guess that is, I mean, when I was visiting Sam's parents, they do cocktail hour every afternoon or like, yeah, like sort of post work, which I did not grow up with in my family. And I was like, what? So this is the point of a happy hour, actually. It's to have a cocktail before it's time for dinner.
Yeah.
Oh, I love cocktail hour.
I mean, it's very chic. There can be something very chic about it. I'm trying to think like... It's like fun to rail against happy hour, of course. There's a million things to rail against. But I'm also like in like a healthy like labor market, we do get to have a like there is something where it's like, no, we actually have to fight for happy hour. We have to fight for 5 p.m. We are out of the office and we are able to go to a bar.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it does allow... Because otherwise you might just continue working, especially if it's like a happy hour on like a Thursday. A Thursday happy hour is something I think that's a little special.
Thursday happy hour is queer.
Well, Thursday happy hour. I mean, there is the magical moment when you're like, okay, I'll go to happy hour and you have like 2 drinks and then you're like all in and you're like, okay, actually we're going and we're going to have an amazing night now and we're not going to stop until it's 9 p.m. You're like, that is a magical feeling.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So happy hour is embedded within a sort of like downtown office culture inherently. Like, as you were saying, Lauren, like the places that have happy hours are the overpriced places that cater to a business casual crowd. So in that sense, it's so neoliberal, it's so capitalist, blah, blah, blah. But in the other sense, a happy hour is so worker friendly because it's not, the CEO is not going to happy hour. So a happy hour is actually a place where the proletariat can congregate and actually organize and potentially found a new political party centered around equality and justice for all.
Yeah. Like I'm imagining, you know, you're planning the revolution around in a big beer hall, right?
Exactly. Yeah, even an Aperol Spritz and it's $3 off.
Which does, I mean, that's like, it does occur to me also that, you know, the dream of happy hour was also for me, largely a dream for like a good portion of my 20s. It became like the way that I could like have a shared language with my friends who like had real jobs while I was in grad school. So like for me,
totally,
happy hour was actually, it wasn't actual like dressing up event, because I would be in my apartment all day. So I'm just like, let me know when to meet you guys. And I would like put on my little outfit and like do my makeup and whatever. And everyone talks about their jobs and I'm like nodding and not really participating. But there was, I think, something about, I think also the fantasy of happy hour is like the fantasy of living in a city.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's Sex in the City.
Yes.
It's Sex in the City. It's even Friends, I would argue. It's got it all.
Yeah. Okay. It's so evocative what you're saying, Lauren, about like being the one person who doesn't have a traditional job or who is a freelancer or who is between jobs or who like has a job that is not an office job or whatever. You have to like, you almost feel like you're living a lie to be like, well, I'm getting dressed up in my home at 3 p.m. Like I'm taking a shower at 3 p.m. in order to make this happy hour at 5 p.m. And I guess I have this dirty secret that I wasn't in an office all day, but everyone else was.
Right. Because you can't, I think the clothes feature so heavily in that, because the idea is you're coming straight from work. So everyone's in their business casual, but then it's like, what is business casual?
But what are you going to do? Put on business casual so that you can fit in with the people that don't even want to be in business casual?
No, that's absurd, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also, the sort of like additional portion of the fantasy is like the going from day to night of it all. I don't know if this was a familiar part of your upbringing, but like in magazines like 17 and Cosmo, there was like always this like how to take a look from day to night. Here's what you do to your makeup that you put on this morning so that it's fit to be seen by like the nightlife folk or whatever. And much like Quicksand, I just thought this would feature so much heavily in my like day to day as an adult than it actually has, because it turns out, you know, when people go out for happy hour, like they don't care. Like they're not actually looking for you to turn into a fashionista or something.
You know, the only day to night I have to deal with in my current life is like in the summer when it's like going from day to night, where like day gay guy is like little shorts, little tank top, and you're like, you know, dressed like a bartender at a gay bar. And then like it's like nighttime and you're like going to meet up with friends somewhere normal, and you're like, wait, I actually I need to dress down a little bit. Like I'm dressed so like, like a farm boy who's like,
is that
learning
true?
About sexuality.
I almost feel like it's funny. Like I feel like what in 17 or Cosmo or whatever, I would assume what women are told is to find an office appropriate look that can potentially translate well to the nighttime. Whereas I think gay guys, especially now, the solution is actually just show up to work in a club outfit. Like it's the opposite, where rather than being like, how can I find a business casual outfit that I can wear to the club? It's literally like, well, which of these like jock straps can I actually wear on its own to, you know, my job at Deutsche Bank?
Throw a blazer on it.
Yeah, throw a blazer
exactly.
On it. I did work at J. Crew when I first moved to New York, and I loved telling people like, "Oh, and it's perfect for day to night." Like, I to be able to say that was so fun. It felt like so informed when it really meant nothing.
Yeah, but it does mean something, is the thing.
That's true,
because you don't want to be wearing khakis at the big party.
The big party.
At the big party that we're all going to. Well, in the same way that, like, I know that I can fantasize about fast casual food because I'm like, you know, office people eat this every day. But I, you know, I haven't had like an office job, a traditional like long-term office job. So I don't eat it that often. Like when I eat it, it's because I'm going to Midtown for something on purpose. And so it feels kind of novel. And happy hour feels that way to me too. I wonder if you are like an office person and your life will be in an office, do you get sick of happy hour? Or does it become a chore? Is it something you don't like?
Unfortunately, I mean, I am not qualified to answer that question because I still don't have a normal job.
I feel like it depends on like, okay, a lot of things depend on this. It depends on how inherently depressing, you find day-to-day life. You know what I mean? Like, I actually think if you just are a little, are not super critical and are just like enjoying your job at the big online digital company and you're going to happy hour, you're like, how fun. I worked so hard today. I absolutely slayed that presentation. I got a really good mid-year review. Yeah, I'm going to go like have a Campari spritz, which I read on, you know, Eater is better than an Aperol spritz at my job. Whoopsies. Don't tell anyone I'm reading Eater at my job. I'm so crazy. My name's Natalie. And so it, and so for her, I think it never gets depressing. But for someone who like already hates their coworkers and is just like so sick of their job, they're like, are you fucking kidding me? I have to go and also drink with them.
Right. Because it's also
so
like
everything. It's sort of,
it's compulsory a bit, right?
Yes,
it's that like
exactly.
Part of like the intangibles of like fit and culture and like soft skills where like, if you don't go to the routine happy hours, it's like, are you going to be a team player on this like project to, I don't know, do something probably destructive to the planet, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like the fridge full of free snacks. Like, yeah, I like the free, no one can say, no, I don't like the free snacks, but I hate what they represent.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other, I'm not sure if it's even sort of like more interesting aspect of happy hour is I do wonder what happy hour in the suburbs is like. I mean, I don't really wonder, but it's kind of a black box to me. I don't know what goes on there, but I do know that like the Applebee's and the Chili's have a lot of happy hour like type deals, which is always,
I mean, they literally have like dollar margaritas,
right? Which is always confounding because the parking lot is bigger than the restaurant. So I'm like, what are we doing?
Yeah. Well, everyone is having extramarital affairs at a suburban Applebee's.
Well, that's where it gets LGBTQ plus again.
I kind of agree. Like, yeah, there's actually something more sexy about a Midwestern Applebee's than about like a sort of mediocre Manhattan bar.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's such a rebellion in the suburbs, I feel. You are like, you're pretty much Iggy Pop, you know, when
exactly.
You are going to the bar, to Applebee's for happy hour.
Damn.
And not to mention you're Iggy Pop. You're also rebellious in the sense that you are drunk driving home.
Well, that's...
doesn't get more rebellious than that.
That's the great unsaid about suburban happy hour.
Totally. Totally.
I mean, the way that this has always confused me, like whenever I think about, you know, so many people live in places where they are driving everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, but what do you do? Bars still exist there. What do you do? And they're like, shh. And like, so no one's going to say it. No one's going to say what you do.
Yeah. Never ask a woman her age, a man his salary, or someone who lives in the Midwest if they drive drunk.
It is crazy to me. Somebody's got to wake it up.
Do we think happy hour is more or less straight than brunch? Because I feel like they occupy a similar space in the popular imagination as like things that are so forcefully meant to be fun that if you're quote unquote actually cool, you rebel against them.
I think it's more straight because there is the work element. I think brunch, whether you have a job or not, you can go to brunch.
That's true.
Yeah, brunch, I think, I will say this, I think brunch is getting straighter. Is that like a thing
100%.
That can be, it's almost like it's like, you know, circling back where, you know, the idea of brunch, not that I know anything about the origins of this meal, seem like they like originate in like a very straight, like hetero place.
Country club.
Yes. Like linen and like Chanel, whatever. And then, you know, became, I mean like, brunch on Sex and the City is like, that is queer, right?
Yes. Yeah.
But then now, like the drag brunch of it all, which like you would think would be queer, is actually like one of the straightest things you can do.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm sorry to use this archetype, but it's very almost Karen. Like brunch now is like Republican white women.
Yes. No, it's for, yeah. It's for that, like distinctly for that demographic, for the,
yeah,
you know, the fans of, well, fans of Beyonce who, you know, listen to Single Ladies and like nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
The happy hour and brunch binary is interesting because I do think brunch is for, you know, discussing, in the Sex and the City sense, it's for discussing sex. It's for discussing, you know, how wild your night was, how wild your weekend is going. And happy hour is a way, is not about, you are not discussing sex, you are discussing work, but it does get, there is the trope of it getting sexy. Like it blurs a lot. Like you like enter real personality again within happy hour and sometimes too rapidly and try to hook up with your coworker.
Exactly. It's like, it's, you're like totally slowly, you know, watching like the evolution of like work personality to real life personality or like nightlife personality. Yes. And the, you know, not to rely on cliches, but like the ties get loosened. I mean, no one even wears ties anymore, mm-hmm. but the like proverbial tie and like the blazer, which again, I don't think people wear anymore. Like yeah. the blazer
no,
comes
the
off.
Patagonia vest is getting unzipped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I almost am like, does that make it more queer in that it's this like, it's a spectrum. It's this halfway point on the spectrum where one end is professional and one end is, you know, your private life, your personal life. Like it is, there's a sort of like almost like, you know, 80s, 90s erotic thriller excitement to a happy hour.
A happy hour is cruising. A happy hour is, yeah. it's the 70s and you are cruising Central Park. Like, yeah. because,
well, maybe it's that's the promise of it, but then the reality of it is so not that is what makes it straight. Like it's supposed to have all this possibility. I mean, it's literally happy hour. And then you get there and you're just sort of like, okay, like maybe next time, I guess I'm not hooking up with Brian again, or, you know, this Tuesday.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, yeah. Okay. The spectrum thing I think has some legs. Like if we think about like the most like archetypical, like, I was gonna say like Don Draper, but like that's not even like, because that's not happy hour. That's like what lunch.
That's three martini
that's
lunch.
That's what lunch, yeah. right? Yeah. But if we think about like a man who has a job and a family, which
totally
many of them exist.
Talk about kinky.
Right? It's like he leaves work, so he is no longer like employee, coworker, whatever. He's not yet home, right? So he's not dad. Mm. He's still not dad. He's still not father. He's still not yeah. husband. It's like, what yeah. is he during happy hour?
Wow.
Something else.
You know, happy hour is where he can just be Brian.
That is so powerful, actually.
Yeah.
No, now I'm it's like, really save true. Happy hours. We need it now more
yeah.
than ever.
Happy hour is sort of, I mean, it's a place for straight people to do identity play. Like they can just be anyone they want.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about like, you know, like queer people love to be like, you know, in the clubs, I found myself and I was able to be like, to mm-hmm. express myself in this way. And like, yes, I was fucked up, but it was like honest and it was real. And it's like, that's happy hour for Brian.
Yeah.
And I love that for him. He needs it.
He needs yeah. it just as much as anybody else. Wow. Well, that was powerful.
Yeah. Do we have any? This is like a quintessential, I feel like this is such a quintessential straight topic.
Yeah.
Like I'm like, talk about a great prompt for some theorizing. Well, somewhere out there, you know, all the affect theorists are shaking.
Yeah.
In their boots.
In their affected little boots.
And their affected little boots.
Yeah, we're the poptimists of mm-hmm. of happy hour. I love it.
Yeah.
There we go.
We always get there in the end.
We do.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. you'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Should we do our final segment?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I was sort of, I had one moment where I was like dissociating because I realized I didn't have anything for our final segment. But
I don't have anything either, but let me think for 1 second.
I'll explain what it is. So okay. Lauren, our final segment, as you know, is called Shoutouts, and we pay homage to the radio shoutout, the classic straight oral tradition that has been passed down from generations, from Brian to Brian, all the way to us today. And, you know, traditionally we do think of it on the spot, and sometimes that is easier than others. Sam, do you have one?
I can do
It'll
one.
Come to me.
I can
It'll
do
come
one.
To me. Are you sure?
Yeah, it's mid, but we'll try it.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. What's up, everybody? Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. I want to give a huge shout out to tea. That's right. I sips tea. I'm drinking tea these days. You know, since I have had my medical issues, I think my blood is still not back to normal, to be quite honest. So I have had coffee and it makes me so anxious now and immediately fucks my whole self up. So I'm drinking tea and it's much easier on my body. No, I don't feel the rush. Shout out Troye Sivan, but I do feel, you know, there's something about doing a little bit less. You know, I'm in a scaling back era and sort of being like, you know, maybe I don't need to go buck wild on a cold brew. Maybe I can just have 7 teas throughout the day, maintain sort of a calm buzz, and that is enough. I'm pulling back in every way, shape, and form. I'm sort of living my lifestyle, and it's weird and it's a little bit disappointing, but I am enjoying the tea element. So shout out to tea, and needless to say, I spilled. XOXO Sam.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
No,
well, it's confusing. I do miss, I am in a transitional era, and my medical issue, whatever it is, mm-hmm. has like, you know, physically changed me a little bit, and I'm like, I want to get back to who I was, but right totally. Now I'm a little bit like cautious in every way, in a way that I don't enjoy actively, but it is like an interesting thing to to perceive myself through.
There are worse things than becoming a tea person. Tea people are great.
Totally.
Some tea people are so annoying.
Tea, I have to say, like, tea is very grad school coded to me.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Well, because it's not, well, not to admit my coffee preferences, but it's like, tea is like not, it's not real. It's like, it's not a real caffeinated beverage.
Right.
People are like, oh, don't drink, you know, black tea at night. You know, black tea has, I'm like, come on.
Yeah, let's get real. Let's get real.
I can absolutely drink black tea at night and go to sleep.
Yeah, talk about snowflake vibes. People saying you can't drink black tea at night. It's like, how about try actually entering the real world for a second?
There's something about tea also, like someone holding a teacup and like dipping their little tea bag. I'm like, so you're judging me. There's an element where I'm like, so you think you're better than me.
Well, yeah, literally sips tea.
But also, like, can we admit, like, that, what does that do? That doesn't do... You're either, it has to steep. What does like bouncing up, yeah. Up and down, does that do anything?
People need
quit
to do
bouncing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, please.
No, you're totally right. Wow. I'm glad we brought this up. Actually, don't shout out to tea. Fuck tea. And if you drink tea, in the words of our friends Pat and Kat, seek treatment.
Seek treatment. Okay. All right. I can do a shout out. Okay. What's up, readers? That's right. I'm getting back into books. People, you know, fans at home might know that I have been reading the book The Bee Sting by Paul Murray. It is like if Jonathan Franzen was Irish and also not annoying. And I am enjoying the hell out of it. But let me tell you something. There is a full-on 150-page section that has no punctuation. And it is meant to represent that the woman who is doing the narrating is so, like, stressed and anxious and everything is going a mile a minute that she can't even pause to put a comma in a period. And while I do appreciate the formal experimentation, as a reader, I did not enjoy that. And so basically my shout out is to me last night finishing that section, which again was almost 200 pages of no punctuation in a feminist way because it's narrated by a woman. So shout out to punctuation. I've just changed my shout out. Actually, it's not the book. Shout out to punctuation. The way we know how to read something. You know, as Joni Mitchell once said, you don't know what you got till it's gone. And in the sample from that Janet Jackson song. And so basically, shout out to punctuation. You actually can do so much with it. I'm talking commas, semicolons, colons even, periods, question marks, exclamation points. And you know, when you're trying to be cool by being all lowercase and no punctuation over text, check your privilege, because punctuation is important, and punctuation is literally how we know how to read something. And so we need to get past this like post-meaning world we're all living in, get back to real punctuation, and everyone needs to write texts that are written as though they're going to be published on thenewyorker.com.
Wow.
So shout out to punctuation, shout out to the written word, which actually needs to make a comeback. And honestly, shout out to Imelda, the character in my book that doesn't use punctuation, because I get where you're coming from, girl, and I totally understand it. It's just as a reader, I was not able to relate. Woo!
I love that. I actually, punctuation is an interesting thing, because I do stand punctuation. I think it does help, but I actually don't stand punctuation rules. I'm sort of like, no. Like, as long as you're like making it make sense, I do stand
punctuation rules.
Because I'm like, you know, affect theory, that's how I feel about punctuation. I'm like, does it make me feel like I'm understanding the sentence?
Totally.
So like a comma splice, like, do not recognize it, or rather encourage it.
Yeah. Like when you're like, oh, is it a semicolon or a colon that goes here? It's like, babe, whatever you want. Like, I'll get it. I think the sentence will make sense whether or not it's a colon or semicolon.
Oh, see, to me, a carefully placed comma can almost be like passive aggressive. It can be like, it can be a wink.
Well, that I don't disagree with. I more mean like the, if,
oh,
like,
you mean like someone being like, that's wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. No, of course. It's a mode of self-expression like anything else.
Exactly.
I love a semicolon. Yeah. It's my favorite of the bunch.
Me too.
I would say.
Yeah. Colon with a twist.
Talk about queer. Semicolon is probably the most queer punctuation.
I mean, quite literally.
Okay, Lauren, whenever you're ready.
Do you have a shout out?
I guess I do now. Is there like a time thing with this?
No, just go for as long as you want.
Okay.
We put a little soundtrack under it.
Okay, this is probably going to be a little bit short, but I will go for it. Hey, everyone out there. Hey, just wanted to shout out the young gentleman who was sitting next to me on the plane ride that I took yesterday evening. I was wanting to read my book, a book of poetry, actually. I very rarely read poetry. Oh. And I went to go click the little light on the top of the roof of the plane, and mine wasn't working, and his was working. And despite it being dark and him sort of being curled up with his good movie that I actually didn't pay attention to, whatever it was, he turned his light on and shone it in my direction and said that it did not bother him at all, that it was the only light that was shining in the completely dark plane, allowing me to continue to very obnoxiously read my poetry on like a little puddle jumper from North Carolina to Chicago. So shout out to that man who I'm sure is a very chill person, chill personality, wherever you are, if you're listening to this, which I obviously know that you are, because we had a very long conversation. No, we didn't talk at all. So shout out to him. Shout out to reading on planes. Not to change mid shout out, but also reading on planes does make the time go faster, not slower. And it's very good if you have any flight anxiety, like I do a little bit, because you can just focus on the word and the word will get you through. And so that's my shout out. Woo.
Wow.
Woo, woo. I mean, that's incredible. You know, remember when John Krasinski had that show in the pandemic that was like some good news? I think, which was obviously horrible, but I think we need that for like travel viral videos, because all travel viral videos are people like screaming and fighting at each other. I'm ready to see a viral video where a man turns on a light for the woman next to him who is reading a book.
I mean, we've literally gotten to the point where you and I are basically desperate for Upworthy. Like that is what it is. Talk about true horseshoe theory. Like everything is so annoying that actually at this point I would literally go to the good news section of the Huffington Post and just scroll.
But it has to be actual good news, not like this. Totally. Teacher walked 5 miles to make sure their student could have a marker or whatever.
Exactly. Right. It's like this teacher like didn't get surgery so she could afford to get school supplies. Right. It has to be top down. It has to be like
it has to be like these employees like lied about how long they were at work and the boss didn't find out. Like that would be nice.
I was thinking like CEO walks into the ocean or something.
Totally. Yeah.
CEO decides I'm gonna give up and walks into the ocean.
Yeah, it's literally like, finally some good news, this guy that sucks died.
That would be amazing.
Okay, cool.
Lauren, thank you so much for doing the podcast. This was a real treat.
Thank you so much, Lauren.
I think many people will think this is a happy hour.
And there we have it.
Damn. Well, if you're a student at Northwestern, take Lauren's class. That's me trying to promote your work.
Every little bit counts.
Every little bit counts.
So true.
Amazing. Okay, cool.
Bye.
Podcast ends now. Want more? Subscribe to our Patreon for 2 extra episodes a month, Discord access, and more by heading to patreon.com/StradioLab.
And for all our visual learners, free full-length video episodes are available on our YouTube.
Now get back to work.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.